Chapter 8. Knowing how fond his sisters were of Russian fair and Russian floor shows, Van took them Saturday night to Ursus, the best Franco-Estonian restaurant in Manhattan Major. Both young ladies wore the very short and open evening gowns that Vas miraged that season, in the phrase of that season. Ada, a gauzy black, Lucette, a lustrous cantharid green. Their mouths echoed in tone, but not tint, each other's lipstick. Their eyes were made up in a surprised bird-of-paradise style that was as fashionable in loss as in loot. Mixed metaphors and double talk became all three Veens, the children of Venus. The Yuha, the Shoslik, the Eye were facile and familiar successes, but the old songs had a peculiar poignancy, owing to the participation of a Lyaskan contralto and a Banff bass, renowned performers of Russian romances, with a touch of heart-wringing Tsiganshchina, vibrating through Grigoryev and Glinka. And there was Flora, a slender, hardly nubile, half-naked music hall dancer of uncertain origin, Romanian, Romani, Ramsian, whose ravishing services Van had availed himself of several times in the fall of that year. As a man of the world, Van glanced with bland, perhaps too bland, unconcern at her talented charms. But they certainly added a secret bonus to the state of erotic excitement tingling in him from the moment that his two beauties had been unfurred and placed in the colored blaze of the feast before him. And that thrill was somehow augmented by his awareness, carefully profiled, diaphanally blinkered, of the furtive, jealous, intuitive suspicion with which Ada and Lucette watched, unsmilingly, his facial reactions to the demure look of professional recognition on the part of the passing and repassing Blyadutchka, cute whorlet, as our young missus referred to, very expensive and altogether delightful Flora, with ill-feigned indifference. Presently, the long sobs of the violins began to affect and almost choke Van and Ada, a juvenile conditioning of romantic appeal, which at one moment forced tearful Ada to go and powder her nose, while Van stood up with a spasmodic sob, which he cursed but could not control. He went back to whatever he was eating and cruelly stroked Lucette's apricot-bloomed forearm, and she said in Russian, "I'm drunk and all that, but I adore. Abishaya, I adore, I adore, I adore more than life you. You, tebya, tebya. I ache for you unbearably. Yataskuyu, po tebya, nivinassimo. And please don't let me swill yastet champagne anymore. Not only because I will jump into Goodson River if I can't hope to have you, and not only because of the physical red thing. Your heart was almost ripped out, my poor Dushinka. Darling, more than darling. It looked to me at least 8 inches long."
7½, murmured modest Van, whose hearing the music impaired.
"But because you are Van, all Van, and nothing but Van, skin and scar, the only truth of our only life, of my accursed life, Van, Van, Van."
Here Van stood up again, as Ada, black fan in elegant motion, came back, followed by 1,000 eyes, while the opening bars of a romance, on Fett's glorious Ciela Noche, started to run over the keys, and the bass coughed a la Russe into his fist before starting. A radiant night, a moon-filled garden, beams lay at our feet. The drawing room unlit, wide open, the grand piano, and our hearts throbbed to your song, as throbbed the strings in it. Then Banofsky launched into Glinka's great Amphibrox. Mikhail Ivanovich had been a summer guest at Ardis when their uncle was still alive. A green bench existed where the composer was said to have sat under the pseudo-acacias, especially often, mopping his ample brow. "Subside, agitation of passion." Then other singers took over with sadder and sadder ballads. "The tender kisses are forgotten," and The time was early in the spring. The grass was barely sprouting. And many songs have I heard in the land of my birth. Some in sorrow were sung, some in gladness. And the spuriously populist, there's a crag on the Ross, overgrown with wild moss, on all sides, from the lowest to highest, and a series of viatic plaints, such as the more modestly anapestic, in a monotone tinkles the yoke bell, and the roadway is dusting a bit, and that obscurely corrupted soldier dit of singular genius, Nadezhda, I shall then be back, when the true batch outboys the riot. And Turgenev's only memorable lyrical poem beginning, Morning so nebulous, morning gray dawning, reaped fields so sorrowful under snow coverings. And naturally, the celebrated pseudo-gypsy guitar piece by Apollon Grigoryev, another friend of Uncle Ivan's, Oh, you, at least, do talk to me, my seven-stringed companion. Such yearning ache invades my soul, such moonlight fills the canyon. I declare we are satiated with moonlight and strawberry souffle. The latter, I fear, has not quite risen to the occasion, remarked Ada in her archest, Austin maidenish manner. Let's all go to bed. You have seen our huge bed, pet? Look, our cavalier is yawning, fit to declench his master. Vulgar Lador Kant. How, ascension of Mount Yon, true, uttered Vaughn, ceasing to palpate the velvet cheek of his Cupidon peach, which he had bruised but not sampled. The captain, the Vinicherpe, the Schlosslichman, and a crew of waiters had been utterly entranced by the amount of Zernistaya Idra, and I, consumed by the vaporous-looking viands, and were now keeping a multiple eye on the tray that had flown back to Vaughn with a load of gold change and banknotes. Why? Asked Lucette, kissing Ada's cheek as they both rose, making swimming gestures behind their backs in search of the furs locked up in the vault or somewhere. Why did the first song, Uzhgasli Vromnatka Ogni, and the redolent roses, upset you more than your favorite fete and the other about the bugler's sharp elbow? Vaughn, too, was upset, replied Ada cryptically and grazed with freshly rouged lips tipsy Lucette's fanciest freckle. Detachedly, merely tactually, as if he had met those two slow-moving, hip-swaying graces only that night, Vaughn, while steering them through a doorway, to meet the cinchilla mantillas that were being rushed toward them by numerous new, eager, unfairly, inexplicably impecunious humans, placed one palm, the left, on Ada's long bare back, and the other on Lucette's spine, quite as naked and long. Had she meant the lad or the ladder? Lapse of the lisping lips. Detachedly, he sifted and tasted this sensation, then that. His girl's encelure was hot ivory. Lucette's was downy and damp. He, too, had had just about his last straw of champagne, namely 4 out of a half dozen bottles minus a rhizom, as we said at old shows. And now, as he followed their bluish furs, he inhaled like a fool his right hand before gloving it.
I say, Veen,
whinnied a voice near him. There were lots of lechers around.
You don't rally need 2, do you?
Vaughn veered, ready to cuff the gross speaker. But it was only Flora, a frightful tease and admirable mimic. He tried to give her a banknote, but she fled, bracelets and breast stars flashing, a fond farewell. As soon as Edmund, not Edmond, who for security reasons, he knew Ada, had been sent back to Kingston, brought them home, Ada puffed out her cheeks, making big eyes, and headed for Vaughn's bathroom. Hers had been turned over to the tottering guest.
This is the end of disc number 12. Please insert disc number 13. This is disc number 13.
As soon as Edmund, not Edmond, who for security reasons he knew Ada had been sent back to Kingston, brought them home, Ada puffed out her cheeks, making big eyes, and headed for Vaughn's bathroom. Hers had been turned over to the tottering guest. Vaughn, at a geographical point a shade nearer to the elder girl, stood and used in a sustained stream the amenities of a little vessi, Kennedy form of WC, next to his dressing room. He removed his dinner jacket and tie, undid the collar of his silk shirt, and paused in virile hesitation. Ada, beyond their bedroom and sitting room, was running her bath. To its gush, a guitar rhythm, recently heard, kept adapting itself aquatically. The rare moments when he remembered her and her quite rational speech at her last sanatorium in Agavia. He licked his lips, cleared his throat, and, deciding to kill two finches with one fir cone, walked to the other, southern extremity of the flat through a boudoir and manger hall. We always tend to talk Kennedy when haute. In the guest bedroom, Lucette stood with her back to him, in the process of slipping on her pale green nightdress over her head. Her narrow haunches were bare, and our wretched rake could not help being moved by the ideal symmetry of the exquisite twin dimples that only very perfect young bodies have above the buttocks and the sacral belt of beauty. Oh, they were even more perfect than Ada's. Fortunately, she turned around, smoothing her tumbled red curls while her hem dropped to knee level. "My dear," said Vaughn, "do help me. She told me about her Valentian estanciero, but now the name escapes me and I hate bothering her."
"Only she never told you," said loyal Lucette, "so nothing could escape." "Nope, I can't do that to your sweetheart and mine, because we know you could hit that keyhole with a pistol."
"Please, little vixen, I'll reward you with a very special kiss."
"Oh, Vaughn," she said over a deep sigh, "you promise you won't tell her I told you?"
"I promise. No, no, no," he went on, assuming a Russian accent as she, with the abandon of mindless love, was about to press her abdomen to his.
"Nikaksits niet."
No lips, no philtrum, no nose tip, no swimming eye. Little vixen's axilla, just that, unless, drawing back in mock uncertainty, "you shave there?"
"I stink worse when I do," confided simple Lucette and obediently bared one shoulder.
"Arm up! Point at paradise, Terra, Venus," commanded Vaughn,
and for a few synchronized heartbeats fitted his working mouth to the hot, humid, perilous hollow. She sat down with a bump on a chair, pressing one hand to her brow.
"Turn off the footlights," said Vaughn. "I want the name of that fellow."
"Vinelander," she answered.
He heard Ada Vinelander's voice calling for her glass bed slippers, which, as in Kordulenka's Princessdom too, he found hard to distinguish from dance footwear, and a minute later, without the least interruption in the established tension, Vaughn found himself in a drunken dream making violent love to Rose, no to Ada, but in the Rosacean fashion on a kind of lowboy. She complained that he hurt her like a tiger Turk. He went to bed and was about to doze off for good when she left his side. Where was she going? Pet wanted to see the album.
"I'll be back in a rubby," she said.
Tribadic schoolgirl slang.
"So keep awake. From now on, by the way, it's going to be Cher Ami Fe Morata,"
play on the generic and specific names of the famous fly,
"until further notice."
"But no sapphic vorschmacks," mumbled Vaughn into his pillow.
"Oh, Vaughn," she said, turning to shake her head, one hand on the opal doorknob at the end of an endless room. "We've been through that so many times. You admit yourself that I am only a pale, wild girl with gypsy hair in a deathless ballad, in a nulliverse, in Ratner's Menald world, where the only principle is random variation. You cannot demand," she continued, somewhere between the cheeks of his pillow, for Ada had long vanished with her blood-brown book,
You cannot demand pudicity on the part of a delphinette. You know that I really love only males, and alas, only one man.
There was always something colorfully impressionistic, but also infantile, about Ada's allusions to her affairs of the flesh, reminding one of Baffle painting, or little glass labyrinths with two peas, or the artist's throwing trap, you remember? Which tossed up clay pigeons and pine cones to be shot at, or cockamaroo, Russian bix, played with a toy cue on the billiard cloth of an oblong board with holes and hoops, bells and pins, among which the ping-pong-sized Eburnian ball zigzagged with bix-pix concussions. Tropes are the dreams of speech. Through the boxwood maze and bagatelle arches of Ardis, Van passed into sleep. When he reopened his eyes, it was 9 a.m. She lay curved away from him, with nothing beyond the opened parenthesis, its contents not yet ready to be enclosed, and the beloved, beautiful, treacherous, blue-black bronze hair smelt of Ardis, but also of Lucette's eau de grâce. Had she cabled him? Cancelled or postponed? Mrs. Viner, no, Vingolfer, no, Vinelander, first Rusky to taste the Labruska grape. Miss Nitsa Sapernik Shaslevoy! Mikhail Ivanovich, arcading the sand with his cane, humped on his bench under the creamy racemes. I dream of a fortunate rival. In the meantime, it's Dr. Hangover for me and his strongest caffeine pill. Ada, being at 20 a long morning sleeper, his usual practice, ever since their new life together had started, was to shower before she awoke and, while shaving, ring from the bathroom for their breakfast to be brought by Valerio, who would roll in the laid table out of the lift into the sitting room next to their bedroom. But on this particular Sunday, not knowing what Lucette might like, he remembered her old craving for cocoa, and being anxious to have an engagement with Ada before the day began, even if it meant intruding upon her warm sleep, Van sped up his ablutions, robustly dried himself, powdered his groin, and without bothering to put anything on, re-entered the bedroom in full pride, only to find a tousled and sulky Lucette, still in her willow-green nightie, sitting on the far edge of the concubital bed, while fat-nippled Ada, already wearing, for ritual and fatidic reasons, his river of diamonds, was inhaling her first smoke of the day, and trying to make her little sister decide whether she would like to try the Monaco's pancakes with Potomac syrup, or perhaps their incomparable amber and ruby bacon. Upon seeing Van, who, without a flinch in his imposing deportment, proceeded to place a rightful knee on the near side of the tremendous bed, Mississippi Rose had once brought there, for progressive visual education purposes, her two small toffee-brown sisters and a doll almost their size but white, Lucette shrugged her shoulders and made as if to leave, but Ada's avid hand restrained her. "Pop in, pet." It all started with the little one letting wee winds go free at table, circa 1882. "And you, garden god, ring up room service. 3 coffees, 6 soft-boiled eggs, lots of buttered toast, loads of..." "Oh, no," interrupted Van. "2 coffees, 4 eggs, etc. I refuse to let the staff know that I have 2 girls in my bed. 1... test Flora is enough for my little needs." "Little needs," snorted Lucette. "Let me go, Ada. I need a bath and he needs you." "Pet stays right here," cried audacious Ada, and with one graceful swoop plucked her sister's nightdress off. Involuntarily, Lucette bent her head and frail spine. Then she lay back on the outer half of Ada's pillow in a martyr's pudibund swoon, her locks spreading their orange blaze against the black velvet of the padded headboard. "Uncross your arms, silly," ordered Ada and kicked off the top sheet that partly covered 6 legs. Simultaneously, without turning her head, she slapped furtive Van away from her rear, and with her other hand made magic passes over the small but very pretty breasts, gemmed with sweat,
and along the flat, palpitating belly of a sea sand nymph, down to the firebird seen by Van once, fully fledged now, and as fascinating in its own way as his favorite's blue raven. Enchantress, Akrasia. What we have now is not so much a Casanovic situation. That double wencher had a definitely monochromatic pencil, in keeping with the memoirs of his dingy era, as a much earlier canvas of the Venetian Sensu Largo school, reproduced in Forbidden Masterpieces, expertly enough to stand the scrutiny of a bordel's Vue d'Oiseau. Thus seen from above, as if reflected in the Ciel mirror that Eric had naively thought up in his Cyprian dreams. Actually, all is shadow up there, for the blinds are still drawn, shutting out the gray morning. We have the large island of the bed, illumined from our left, Lucette's right, by a lamp burning with a murmuring incandescence on the west side bed table. The top sheet and quilt are tumbled at the footboardless south of the island, where the newly landed eye starts on its northern trip, up the younger Miss Veen's pried-open legs. A dewdrop on russet moss eventually finds a stylistic response in the aquamarine tear on her flaming cheekbone. Another trip from the port to the interior reveals the central girl's long white left thigh. We visit souvenir stalls. Ada's red-lacquered talons, which lead a man's reasonably recalcitrant, pardonably yielding wrist out of the dim east to the bright russet west, and the sparkle of her diamond necklace, which, for the nonce, is not much more valuable than the aquamarines on the other, west side of Novelty Novel Lane. The scarred male nude on the island's east coast is half-shaded, and, on the whole, less interesting, though considerably more aroused than is good for him or a certain type of tourist. The recently repapered wall immediately west of the now louder murmuring, et pour cause, Dorocene lamp is ornamented in the central girl's honor with Peruvian honeysuckle, being visited not only for its nectar, I'm afraid, but for the animalcules stuck in it, by marvelous Lodigesia hummingbirds, while the bed table on that side bears a lowly box of matches, a caravanchik of cigarettes, a Monaco ashtray, a copy of Voltaman's Poor Thriller, and a lurid oncidium orchid in an amethystine vaselet. The companion piece on Van's side supports a similar super-strong but unlit lamp, a Dorophone, a box of Wipex, a reading loop, the returned Ardis album, and a separatum, soft music as cause of brain tumors by Dr. Anbury, young Ratner's waggish pen name. Sounds have colors. Colors have smells. The fire of Lucette's amber runs through the night of Ada's odor and ardor and stops at the threshold of Van's lavender goat. 10 eager, evil, loving, long fingers belonging to 2 different young demons caress their helpless bed pet. Ada's loose black hair accidentally tickles the local curio she holds in her left fist, magnanimously demonstrating her acquisition. Unsigned and unframed. That about summed it up, for the magical gewgaw liquefied all at once, and Lucette, snatching up her nightdress, escaped to her room. It was only the sort of shop where the jeweler's fingertips have a tender way of enhancing the preciousness of a trinket by something akin to a rubbing of hind wings on the part of a settled lycanid, or to the frottage of a conjurer's thumb dissolving a coin. But just in such a shop, the anonymous picture attributed to Grillo or Obietto, caprice or purpose, Ober or Unthergart, is found by the ferreting artist. "She's terribly nervous," the poor kid, remarked Ada, stretching across Van toward the Wipex. "You can order that breakfast now, unless..." "Oh, what a good sight! Orchids! I've never seen a man make such a speedy recovery."
"Hundreds of whores and scores of cuties more experienced than the future Mrs. Vinelander have told me that."
"I may not be as bright as I used to be," sadly said Ada, "but I know somebody who is not simply a cat, but a polecat, and that's Cordula Tobacco alias Madame Pervitsky. I read in this morning's paper that in France 90% of cats die of cancer.
I don't know what the situation is in Poland. After a while, he adored Sick, editor, the pancakes. No Lucette, however, turned up, and when Ada, still wearing her diamonds, in sign of at least one more Caro Van and a camel before her morning bath, looked into the guest room, she found the white valise and blue furs gone. A note scrawled in Arlen eyelid green was pinned to the pillow. Would go mad if remained one more night, shall ski at Verma with other poor woolly worms for 3 weeks or so miserable. Poor L. Van walked over to a monastic lectern that he had acquired for writing in the vertical position of vertebrate thought and wrote what follows. Poor L. We are sorry you left so soon. We are even sorrier to have inveigled our Esmeralda and Mermaid in a naughty prank. That sort of game will never be played again with you, darling Firebird. We Apollo apologize. Remembrance, embers, and membranes of beauty make artists and morons lose all self-control. Pilots of tremendous airships and even coarse, smelly coachmen are known to have been driven insane by a pair of green eyes and a copper curl. We wished to admire and amuse you, B.O.P., Bird of Paradise. We went too far. I, Vaughn, went too far. We regret that shameful, though basically innocent, scene. These are times of emotional stress and reconditioning. Destroy and forget. Tenderly yours, A and V, in alphabetic order. I called this pompous puritanical rot, said Ada upon scanning Vaughn's letter. Why should we Apollo for her having experienced a delicious spasmuchka? I love her and would never allow you to harm her. It's curious, you know. Something in the tone of your note makes me really jealous for the first time in my fire. Thus in the manuscript, for life. Editor. Van, somewhere, someday, after a sunbath or dance, you will sleep with her, Van.
Unless you run out of love potions. Do you allow me to send her these lines?
I do, but I want to add a few words.
Her P.S. read,
The above declaration is Van's composition, which I sign reluctantly. It is pompous and puritanical. I adore you, mon petit, and would never allow him to hurt you, no matter how gently or madly. When you're sick of Queen, why not fly over to Holland or Italy?
A. Now let's go out for a breath of crisp air, suggested Vaughn. I'll order Pardis and Peg to be saddled.
Last night two men recognized me, she said. Two separate Californians, but they didn't dare bow, with that silk-tuxedoed bretteur of mine glaring around. One was Anskar, the producer, and the other was a cocotte, Paul Winnier, one of your father's London pals. I sort of hoped we'd go back to bed.
We shall now go for a ride in the park, said Vaughn firmly, and rang first of all for a Sunday messenger to take the letter to Lucette's hotel, or to the Verma resort if she had already left.
I suppose you know what you're doing? Observed Ada.
Yes, he answered.
You are breaking her heart, said Ada.
Ada, girl, adored girl, cried Vaughn. I'm a radiant void. I'm convalescing after a long and dreadful illness. You cried over my unseemly scar, but now life is going to be nothing but love and laughter and corn in cans. I cannot brood over broken hearts. Mine is too recently mended. You shall wear a blue veil and I the false mustache that makes me look like Pierre Legrand, my fencing master.
Au fond, said Ada. First cousins have a perfect right to ride together, and even dance or skate if they want. After all, first cousins are almost brother and sister. It's a blue, icy, breathless day.
She was soon ready, and they kissed tenderly in their hallway between lift and stairs before separating for a few minutes.
Tower,
she murmured in reply to his questioning glance, just as she used to do on those honeyed mornings in the past when checking up on happiness.
And you?
A regular ziggurat,